Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Today, honey baked chicken, white rice quite specifically. I thought it was rice and peas. I called Lily up and said, is it white rice or rice and peas? And her and Makita simultaneously went, white rice! I'm like, okay, sorry. So, honey baked chicken, an avocado salad, fried plantain, and white rice, obviously. And this is what I used to make for them every week, probably, like on a regular basis. This is what they would eat. It was like the cheapest thing in the world to make. Sometimes it would be wings, sometimes it would be thighs, sometimes it would even be a bit of a...
Never a breast, though, Mum.
Never a breast. No. Legs or thighs, thighs or legs. Never a breast shelled wing.
Our guest today is Lily Schmilly Poo Poo, Lily Allen.
Lily Schmilly
Poo Poo. Known to us as Schmilly Poo Poo, but to others, Lily Allen. So Lily's been in town doing her play, The Pillow Man, killing it, absolutely killing it, doing 7 shows a week or something. This is Lily's favourite thing in the world, to come round to our house and be cooked for by Mum.
She requested this dinner.
Yeah.
She called McHugh and said, I love your podcast, I want to come on the podcast, can I have honey baked chicken?
Yeah. She didn't say, I'd love to come on the podcast because I'd love to talk and really get deep. She said, will I get honey baked chicken and rice bag on the podcast? I said, yeah. She said, okay, I'll do it. Lily's mum is an incredible woman called Alison Owen, my auntie Alison.
I first remember Alison flying down Old Compton Street, just like in some kind of Victorian. She used to wear these kind of fitted Victoriana kind of dresses and look absolutely brilliant. With her hair all back home, just flying about, being brilliant and hilarious. And she's one of my dearest friends. I love her and I love all of her children.
So people say to me, how long have you known Lily? And I say, since the beginning of her life, because she's a year younger than me.
Since the beginning of her.
So it's the beginning of her life. So I don't know a life without Lily in it. And obviously we've been through so much as a family, but me and Lily particularly have been through this whole career trajectory thing together and going through similar experiences together. And we're in a really good place at the moment. We were always utterly terrified, horrified that we'd ever be in our late 30s. And now I'm 39, she's 38. Our birthdays are a week apart. We're both Taurians. We're very similar. We're very competitive, but we love each other dearly and fiercely. And I'm really excited that she's going to come round and be loved up today.
Hello.
Hi. Looking
hi.
Honey.
So I made you this sorrel and rosemary and mint and lemon steeped tea, and then this is a hibiscus flower.
Oh my goodness!
It goes.
What a treat!
I know. You actually haven't even been round to the family house. We had to record a podcast to see you.
No, I was listening to the Kathy Burke one. I was like, why has Kathy Burke been in their house? No, I haven't. Why is she getting fed? Food for ages.
Really annoying.
Yeah. I don't know, texted Makita. I was like, listen, what is going on?
And so Lily's like, can I come on the podcast? I was like, yes. Yeah,
right. So does everything look correct, Lily?
Everything looks correct, yeah. I'm very happy. It's been a long time since I've had this.
Yes,
probably.
And you know what?
15, 20 years.
No, we don't normally let people be that specific, but as it was you. Like Steve Jones tried to get really specific. I was like, chill
absolutely
out, Steve.
Not. Mum was having
so what did you request?
Andy's honey baked chicken, white rice, an avocado salad.
Done. Yes. And I've made some plantain and, of course, honey baked chicken gravy.
God, we ate well, didn't we, as children?
Yeah, but also, Annie's got fancy pants now, so when she cooks now, it's like, I just want this.
Yes, I know. No, it's true.
And then it's must like, we're having something like this, and it's like, okay, it's no, that's nice. Cool, but when is the chicken coming back?
I'm so happy you said that. Because I'm always, everyone's like, isn't it great having a mum chef? It's like, I prefer when she just made some nice chicken and rice.
But also, when I had the Kathy Burke episode of this podcast, I was like, this is my in. Get the chicken.
But can we just, so I've made a roast tomato vinaigrette.
Mm-hmm. We're not going to talk about that.
She had to get, you had to get your chefiness
well,
in.
Well, I just
fine.
Had all these little tomatoes and I thought, let me roast them, maybe I'll serve them. And I thought, I'll put them in the vinaigrette.
Right,
and
let's
now,
go.
I'm getting
it's still vibes. It's like moving on.
Moving on from the roast tomatoes.
I'm so pleased that Lily wanted white rice because that's so important for me.
Before we started, I was saying to Taya, when I think of you and Makita, I think of you loving each other, fighting each other, loving each other. But it's like been this kind of table tennis match for your entire lives. 39 years. Because you are both pushing 40.
No, today she said, you know, now the girls are pushing 40. And I was like, whoa. And I was like, actually,
hang
shit,
on
that's
a moment.
Valid now. And I always knew this would be hard. It was hard when I turned 10 and she was still 9. Same at 20.
You panicked about age since we were like 3. Like, you were like, oh my God, we're going to be 16.
I know.
We're going to be so old.
It's true. Oh my
God. So the way you guys grew up, Lily, like all together like that in a kind of tumble, do you think that's affected how you are as a mother?
Sometimes it blows my mind that my mum had 3 children by the time she was 24.
Yeah.
And managed to make such a successful career for herself.
Right.
And I don't... To me, it seems unfathomable that you could achieve that. And I don't think you could do that in this day and age. And she says it was totally different back then and there was a much bigger sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
And that you really could rely on your next-door neighbours to keep an eye on the kids for a few hours while you, you know, went and did certain jobs or whatever. And that just isn't afforded. And I don't think it's because people aren't nice anymore. I just think that we're all so overstretched with our time.
Everybody's overstretched and we live quite differently and you guys kind of live further apart from it. Like, we all lived pretty close to each other all the time. So the kind of ease of which you go, I'm going to drop the kids around or I'm coming over, I'll drop Keats and then I'm going to go. That stuff happened really kind of naturally and easy. It wasn't like a thought out thing.
We have bigger lives than you guys had in the way of like we go off into the world and do things. You guys were all just in a unit in one place for a long time.
Yes, I think that's true.
But also culturally, I think that, you know, in your day, it was more about, you know, what you created as a whole. Like you had the Buffalo scene or the comic strip. Whereas now, because of social media, I think it's the age of the individual. So we all have to focus on ourselves as one rather than as
and
a group.
I think also we just used to... There was a, because you didn't, you couldn't connect to people unless you were outside of your house. Do you know what I mean? People could call you up, but it was a different thing. You didn't have all these 25 different ways of spending time with people.
Mm-hmm.
There was either physically or you made a phone call or there was a letter. It pushed you outside of the confines of your own space and it pushed you into community and it pushed you to build those kind of, cooperative situations more than, the way that today is built does, more than the way the world is built today does. That's quite interesting. I'd never thought about it like that, actually.
What do the girls think of now that Ethel is 10?
Yeah, how old are they?
No, I'm joking. 10 and 11.
And who's your goddaughter? Sorry, Marnie's 10. Marnie's my goddaughter.
Marnie's your goddaughter.
I was very emotional when Lily asked me. But how do they feel about who you are now they're a bit older and what job you've had and the stuff you've done? Do they know about, like, headlining Glastonbury? Does that stuff mean anything to the girls?
No, not yet.
Really?
They're old enough for that to be on their radar. They think that I've been cancelled. Yeah. Marnie, I've actually caught her saying to it. She goes, you know, she wanted to be talking to her friends. She was like, my mummy was cancelled for helping the refugees.
Oh, right. Twitter cancelled.
Yeah. Wow.
And so they do know that terminology. Wow.
Yeah.
Cancelled. So do they know that you were a pop star?
Well, because they know that, like, mummy gets, you know, people are mean about mummy sometimes.
Right,
and so when you're trying to explain that to them, I have to kind of, like, explain to them, like, right-wing Britain.
Right.
Like, Brexit.
Right.
and how mummy has been involved in those things and has made her a bit of a target for people that don't want progress.
For some reason, I don't know, maybe it's just the age we're all getting to these different ages, but I've been thinking a lot, and actually in a couple of interviews I've spoken about you and Makita and the way that what you both have had to deal with in terms of the press, actually. And because to me, I'm so proud of both of you, because I just think you're both... You've both been really brave, and every single time you get knocked down by that stuff, you kind of get back up again and get on with it. But it's been quite brutal.
Yeah, it's been relentless.
You know, when you two were young, it was really quite hardcore. What did it feel like from the other side, Lily, for you?
I don't know if it felt like anything, because I was self-medicating to, like, numb myself to it, I think. But
it is what you wanted.
To, like, a certain extent.
To be hugely well-known and to be a massive success.
Yes, I think so. But also, not really. I mean, I liked it when it happened, but I was also confused by it, because I think, you know, we had all been around fame to a certain extent. You know, you with Nana, me with my dad, and my mum being with Harry Enfield for a few years. And obviously, when things started off for me, I enjoyed the... you know, fast lane, and I was partying quite a lot. But I had watched my dad do that and be celebrated for it.
Interesting, yeah.
And, you know, the whole him and Damien and Alex James from Blur and the Grouchos years and Britpop and lad culture.
Yeah, they were like kings of the world.
Yeah, it was very much... And so I was confused when, you know, I'd be photographed at Glastonbury with a beer can and a cigarette, and it would be presented in such a negative way. Mm. That was definitely odd.
Yeah.
And also just because I think, you know, we were sort of gaslit through our childhood of, like, you know, things are getting to a more equal place. Like, women have equal opportunities. You can do anything. And it was like, okay, I believe that.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, no.
I think that's what that's I saw really as well. Point, I was like, but we were told by you lot, obviously, and sort of somewhat falsely by the world, that, like, this was the age of the opinionated woman. And, like, it was like just post-Ladette. And it was like, you can be it, you can have opinions and say what you want. And that's how I was on Pop World. And obviously there it was celebrated. I think Lil as a pop star was celebrated being opinionated. But everywhere else, they were like, who the fuck do they think they are?
The thing about the Ladette culture, Ladette thing was quite interesting to me, because it was such a construct. Because it
by
came,
men.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because really, there was a moment before the kind of so-called Ladette thing happened, where women were feeling very powerful. We were feeling very powerful and being very outspoken. And then suddenly, what they did was kind of redress a kind of Dolly Bird situation. Yes.
The whole sort of, like, loaded era.
You know, if you didn't want to go to a strip club, it was because you were uptight.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And if you didn't want to, like, get your tits out, it was because you were uptight.
Yeah. Like, no, I'm not uptight. I just quite like wearing my clothes. Do you know what I mean?
It'd be funny, mate. You know, they kind of reworked it. And it was like, they literally gaslit all women.
Everyone, yeah.
And everybody thought you had to do all this stuff and walk about feeling like, yeah, I really fancy going. It's like, it's a really powerful thing to hang around in, you know, be a prostitute and do all those things. And if you didn't agree with that, it was because you were uptight. And then, you know, you're probably frigid, and you're probably all the same old tropes that they'd always trotted out against feminists and women were trotted out again, but from a slightly different direction.
I think that happens now. There's definitely an Instagram version of that now.
Yeah.
Of, you know, what feminism should be for who. And if you don't subscribe to this particular viewpoint, then your opinion is worthless to us as a tribe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we just must... And it must have been like that forever.
But, it's interesting that you talk about that, because I remember being quite shocked at the time, thinking about the Ladette culture thing. I'm thinking, oh, my God, no, but this is the same shit. Do you not see that this is the same shit? Looking around, going, oh, my God, no, they're doing it to us. What are you doing? And it was, like, slightly panicky as a feeling.
What did you think about when you saw the way the press dealt with Lil?
I was horrified. I mean, I just felt really protective about you, because, you know, if any of the kids, any of you are ever feeling vulnerable or in a vulnerable position, obviously, then I just feel like... You know, I want to step in, basically, and be in between any of you and that kind of onslaught. And what you were going through was particularly bad. And because it was so public, you know, because it was the press, it wasn't just in a pub or in a club or in a restaurant or something. It was like a kind of wall. And it felt like old kind of flaky old men. Like, I just had a real image of, like, you know, old Fleet Street kind
of
guys.
Yeah, it was very isolating. I mean, I think the thing is, the worse that it was, the more I would, like, shut down and not communicate and not talk to people. And also, I think that it kind of, like, came at the same, a similar time to smartphones and texts and WhatsApp. So there was, like, I could kind of, like, shut off, but, like, keep contact, like, little bits with people. But what I found upsetting, I think, in that time more than anything was that was when people that I considered to be really close to me would only be able to communicate with me through what they'd seen in the newspapers.
Right.
So it was like, you know, rather than being like, I can see that you're really sad and in pain, it would be like, you must be in pain because of this. And it's like, I'm not, I'm actually not. But I would really like for people to be able to see me as someone that is not that tabloid person. And the worse that that got, the more I would isolate and separate myself. And so it just was like a perpetuating thing that got worse and worse. But it was a learning curve. I'm, you know, I got a house out of it.
Did some extraordinary things as well in that time.
But you know what? You know what we were remembering the other day was that Garfield somewhere has got a demo tape that came round.
No, Lil, it would be good. It would be like those early reggae songs, which I loved.
Grim.
Brilliant.
I can't even listen to the actual albums that came out.
No, so, wait, really not?
Do you really, you can't listen to All Right Still?
Absolutely not.
Are you kidding?
No
There's
way.
Some brilliant songwriting on that album.
That may be the case, but it's not, it's like, you know, I mean, you and I didn't go to university, but I always say it to people, like, you know, when if you had to go back to going to university and sit in your local student union and listen to yourself wanging on about whatever it was that you felt really passionate about at that particular time, you'd be like, get me out of here now. And if you have to do that every night of the week, like, because that's what I had to do when I was touring, is do all those songs. It's like listening to an annoying, like, jumped up youthful version of yourself who hasn't actually experienced anything yet. And it's like, shut up.
And also, why are you talking like that?
No. Because someone actually asked me in an interview, they said, you know, what did you think, what would you say to people that would say that Lily sounded like affectatious? And I said, the thing that people don't understand is that Lily basically did grow up in Grove. None of us spoke proper, like, road, like everyone around us, but that is the language we heard every day. And it was the parlance that was around, and it's what made us feel safe, and, like, the people that we, I don't know, it just, for me, it's very home sounding. So I don't think it's affectations, it's just that is actually what we knew. It's,
I mean, there, like, was, I think it was being slightly affectations, but also I think, you know, I did just sing in an English accent.
No one says anything now when Drake's, like, talking about Roadman in Tottenham.
No, I know!
Like, oh, please.
Does he do that?
Yes.
Often. God, I'm so old, often. I never know anything anymore when it's people make you these references.
You don't need to know what Drake's
I'm just like,
to.
I do know who Drake is.
Oh, good, well done. I
should have. I'm down with the kid.
I want to talk about David because he's my favourite person you've ever married or been out with.
From all your husbands, he's our favourite, Lily.
That's not fair. You've only
married twice.
One of them is to David. That's why I added, and anyone you've ever been out with.
Okay.
David is a beautiful kind of beacon of light, I feel.
He's lovely. I gave him chicken once.
What did you get him chicken?
And he was happy. I don't know, for some reason I brought chicken to your house.
I gave him chicken once.
Why did I bring chicken to your house?
Because I asked for you to bring it over. And
but why would I do that?
Then David had just intercepted it.
Yeah.
Sounds
so he's eating
right.
your food.
Yeah, lovely.
So,
David.
Yes, David. You've been married for a few years now.
Yeah, and I think coming up to three, maybe.
Oh, my God, already? That was quick.
God, yeah. The Vegas wedding.
I like him. He's kind.
Yes.
He's very kind. He's just, he's very different to any other of my partners.
I think he's nicer.
He is, yeah, he's, you know, very sort of optimistic and very encouraging person. I mean, I think he, you know, a little bit what we touched on earlier, he was very confused. And I think Americans don't have the same sort of tabloid culture that we have.
Right.
And so when he was in England filming and we met, I was not in a particularly good place. You know, my marriage to Sam had disintegrated and I was kind of, you know, dating and,
yeah,
you know, I guess, you know, I wasn't really on his radar before and like professionally or whatever, but as a result of us started to seeing each other, he would, you know, come across like bits of information about me, see how the tabloids report. And he was genuinely very confused about the negative slant on everything. And he was just like, what are you doing here? Like,
right.
People are horrible to you. Like, and all you do is like create stuff that like helps people ultimately and makes people feel more human, and you're putting honest, truthful art out into the world, and you just seem to be
being attacked
the whole time.
Yeah.
And he was just like, why didn't you leave? Yeah.
Had you ever thought about not living here?
I had, but then, you know, I had just thought the kids were settled at, you know, at Fox, you know, the
my school, my primary school.
And I just thought I was sort of trapped by motherhood, and that was...
I was going to
be until they were 18. And it wasn't until I met David and he was like, there is another whole world that you could visit. And I was like, oh, really?
Hmm. It's a place called New York City.
Yeah. But then, you know, COVID was what made us, really, because I don't... You know, he was so busy with work. I was so busy, you know, doing work, I guess. And there would never have been a time that we... would have been able to come together and try out living together.
Right.
And I would never have taken the risk of uprooting the kids and moving to New York if I didn't know that it was going to work.
Mm.
So COVID was a blessing for us, really, because it meant, okay, the world has stopped. None of us can work. And he was like, I haven't got anywhere to go. And I said, well, come to England. And he came to England. We lived together for 6 months. And we were like, this works.
And I suppose we should say your husband is an actor.
He is an actor.
Yes.
What's his other name? Harbour.
What's his other name?
David Harbour.
David Harbour.
David Harbour.
He's lovely. Very successful. And do you feel like now you're two actors living together? It's interesting now that you're an actress.
Yeah.
I like it.
No, I don't think we do feel like that.
You don't feel like an actress?
No, but I never felt like a singer either.
Right. Really. Is it you doing different things?
I think I'm just... a forever imposter in everything that I do.
Honestly, even after what's happened with acting and how well it's gone with theatre acting and the response you've had, because I feel like it's been...
Yeah, I don't, like, think of myself as an actress. I think of myself as Lily, that, like, just, you know, I was very lucky that these opportunities come along, you know. I also had, like, a number one Sunday Times best-selling book, but I don't consider myself an author.
Oh, yeah, the book! And it went to number one, just casually.
For 4 weeks.
Just casually, just slip that
you
in there.
You better own that book.
I think as society, we put a lot of pressure on people to be one thing and to do that one thing really, really well and to have a plan. And people are always... Whenever I do those Ask Me Any Questions thing on Instagram, people are always like, what's the goal?
I mean,
just to make shit
and stay alive.
Hope people like it, I guess.
I'm very different to you now. I'm like very planny, very goal-y.
Goal-oriented.
I am quite goal-oriented these days.
You are, but that's been really good for you.
Mm.
Because it's given you clarity.
Yeah. I thought you were the same, though.
I think maybe I'm the same in terms of short-term. Like, when I commit to doing something, I really commit to it and I see that project through. Like this play, for instance, like my thing is that I will not miss a show. I don't care how sick I am. I don't care how tired I am. Like, I'm going to do every single show and I'm going to be able to say that to myself at the end of the run.
But it's quite interesting, though, that you don't think about yourself in those kind of terms. You just think about sort of putting out artistic output, endeavour, or just doing projects that you want to engage with.
I just like, you know, things come along and I'm like... Yeah, actually, that does seem like quite.
I've always been like that. I think it's quite healthy.
Yeah.
Because then you're not stuck in one road.
Well, that's why I think that this is just a bit of a myth around like talent. It's convenient for people to think that like they'll be good at one thing and they should focus on that one thing. And I don't. I think that everybody is actually probably a lot more talented than they know they are because they're too focused on this one idea. And I think, you know, I feel very just lucky, and for want of a more less annoying word, privileged, that I get all of these opportunities. You know, I've made it with singing.
New Look came along to me and said, do you want to design a capsule collection?
Oh my yes, God, I remember that.
BBC Three came along and said, do you want to try presenting a TV show? Yeah, actually I do want to do that.
And so I've been good at some of those things and not so good at a lot of those things, but I've enjoyed trying them all out. And I think that if everybody, you know, if everybody had the chance to do that, then they would probably find out that there's, you know, a lot more going for them
with them than they exactly. even realised.
So yeah, that's how you approach the acting. Like when you got 222, the first play, you were just like, okay, let me see what I'm like at this.
Was that their idea or your idea?
No, it was totally them. And I was, initially I was like, absolutely not. Why would I do that?
West End play.
So I was just moved to New York. And so I was like, you know, somebody, I mean, I literally had put the key in the door to our house and my phone rang and it was this casting agent. She was like, hi, I got your number from your mum because I'm working on another project, but I'm casting this play. Would you be up for doing it? And I was like, well, when is it? She was like, it's in July in London. And I was like, well, no, I live in New York and also I don't act. So
yeah, you know. Also I'm not an actress.
And then I went home that night and David asked me, you know, what I'd done with my day. And a couple of the nights before that, I'd had a bit of a sort of existential crisis. I was like, what am I going to do in New York? And then I said, oh, yeah, well, actually, this casting agent called me about this play. And he was like, well, what's the play about? And I said, I don't know. I got off the phone. He said, maybe you should call back and see what it was about. I called her back. She sent me the script. And it, because, you know, 222, that play was about ultimately, a relationship between a young mother and her baby. Oh. But it's a horror. And so, you know, I lost a baby before Ethel was born. Mm-hmm. I had a son called George. And so I read this thing and I just immediately assumed this is going to be a dead baby. That's why they've asked me to do this, because they're like, you know, she'll be able to relate to this story. And so I stopped reading it and I said to David, you can read the rest of it. I don't want anything to do with it. And he read it and he was like,
don't
keep going.
It's safe.
And then I read it and I called the director and I said, you know, a big part of sobriety as well is like, you know, if you're doing the 12-step program, which I was at the time, is surrendering yourself to the universe and just kind of letting, stop trying to control everything so much. And so, you know, this thing, I had been upset about not feeling a little bit directionless. And then this thing came to me and I just thought, well, actually, yeah, just throw yourself to the wind. And then I really enjoyed it. I loved it so much.
And was it terrifying, like, first night, like, before you went on? What was that like?
That first week before we did talk a lot and you were like, what the hell am I doing? I was like... You got this.
It was horrendous. It was horrendous. And I remember on the opening night, Isabel, who is the assistant director, she came into my dressing room. I don't remember because I'm so traumatized. I've kind of blocked it out or whatever. But she said I was literally face down on the floor in my dressing room, like dry retching into the carpet.
Oh my God.
Like, I can't do this. I'm not going to.
This is classic feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, that's like.
Yeah, but also I do like doing big things that seem too big for me and terrifying because they make me feel alive in some way.
Yeah, we say if your dreams don't scare you, maybe they're not big enough.
Yeah. But it's quite like, it's a good feeling that it's like, I am absolutely terrified and I'm still going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And also I'm a bit of a blagger, you know, so I think there's that. And I'd probably get that from my dad. Like when I was writing All Right Still, I remember like going up to write music in Manchester. I'd never written the music before. And they were like, you know, wrote Smile was the first song that I wrote. And they were like, well, now we need a middle eight. And I remember... what the fuck is a middle eight? And I had to leave the studio and go outside and call George Lamb, my manager.
You couldn't even Google.
And be like, what is a middle eight? And he was like, oh, it's just that bit, you know.
And you were...
Which is why in Smile it's just me going, la 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 la. I got better at those middle eights.
Yeah. Still a great melody of a middle eight.
But I do like to take on these. It's a little bit like, can I trick them into thinking I'm a theatre actress?
Can you trick yourself into thinking?
No, that's the thing, I can't.
But I think you're also a hustler, like in the best of ways. Because I feel like there's quite a lot of like, blagging is one thing, but also it's like getting on with it and turning things into the things you've turned them into. It's quite the blag. Mm. How did you feel the idea of just... not working and being a mum and not doing anything with your career and just focusing on the other side of life?
It's weird. It's really weird. Because I have been so driven, and also pretty quickly after things got, you know, I became successful in my early 20s, I suddenly then had responsibilities like mortgage repayments and nannies and, you know, just I had employees, I had like tours and everyone was on my payroll. And so I had to keep going. And so it was that fear of not being able to, you know, meet the expectations of everybody and to do what I had started that kind of kept me going. So I think, you know, stopping and, you know, and marrying David is the first time that I've been in a relationship where somebody else has kind of taken the lead in that sense. I've never been able to surrender. And it did kind of bring up a lot of problems at first.
Yeah.
I found it really hard.
What, that he was the breadwinner suddenly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not know how to deal with
it. No, I don't think I would.
It's quite weird.
Because everyone wants it. It's the dream, right? Isn't it?
It's never been my dream.
Credit card out and blah, blah, blah. And someone else pays for the holiday. And I was just like, I just did not like it.
No, I don't think I would.
I don't mind it now.
You've got to go for it.
Yeah. It's actually not that bad, guys.
because I think as you describe that, it does sound quite alarming to me, because it sounds like a relinquishment of independence.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And nobody sitting around this table is. Well, really,
it would
up
come out
that.
In other ways. So, you know, I'd find myself like started to snap at David in certain ways, or trying to sort of control other parts of our relationship. And he was like, "You know, this is because I'm paying for the holiday, right?" And I was like,
"God, he's good.
God, you're annoying."
He's good. He's good. Good work, David.
Like, we'll talk about this in therapy. But I'm just, well, I see you.
I see
what's happening.
Just flagging. I think I know what's going on.
Garth, it's okay. I don't mind paying.
Garth, do you want some food?
I would love some food. Yeah.
I feel like you could come and say hi to Lily for a minute, seeing as she's your little.
I can't believe you've got you to guys? This point of the series and then you don't.
He's
don't know
never in it.
His debut.
Why don't you two tell people who Garfield is?
This is the man that came into our lives when I was 11, Lily was 10.
And generally make his life hell. He was my mum's boyfriend. He's now my mum's partner of 25 years. And he's raised us and put up with us.
Actually, honey baked chicken is when I kind of like, I used to never eat meat. When I first met your mum, I didn't eat meat for about 12, 13 years. And we weren't really seeing each other. We were kind of like.
We were seeing each other. You were lying.
Still slagging it about the globe, basically.
Yeah. I can't believe you just said we weren't really seeing each other.
We weren't really dating and weren't serious.
At that time, before the chicken, I was eating vegetarian food and Andy brought out this tray of
Tray of chicken.
And I was looking at it thinking.
And he went, fuck it. And started eating meat again.
Yeah.
No.
And it was a honey baked chicken that did it.
You can always get him with a plate of chicken.
Yeah. You can go now, girl.
I am.
You can go now. You're so
rude. Back to the office.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Look at you, you are actually going to a food coma. But you know what? You're completely knackered. How much longer have you got with the play?
Three more weeks.
Three more weeks. How does three more weeks feel?
I mean, I think when I get to the end of this week and it's two more weeks, then it will feel a little bit more like sort of homeward stretchy. But it's
I mean, it's a really challenging part. When I came, me and your mum came the other day and saw you, even as an audience member, it's quite tiring.
Yeah.
So I just can't imagine doing that every single... How long is it? It's quite long.
It's 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Hours and 40 minutes, and you're on all the time.
Yeah.
With a lot to say.
I don't think we should say what it's about, because I think so many people I've spoken to that have been to it didn't know, and I think it's kind of extraordinary... If you don't know what it's about,
but it's weighty stuff. It's deep.
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of and without telling you what exactly the story is, it's sort of it touches on, I guess, authoritarianism, freedom of speech within an authoritarian regime, childhood trauma, how much we suffer for our art as artists.
It's very timely.
Violence against women.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, plethora of stuff.
It's a lot every night and matinees.
Eight shows a week.
Do you think how do you think doing it has affected you? Does it have an emotional effect on you?
Like? It wasn't. I had done really well at separating the two things and disassociating. And then about 2 weeks ago, there were two medical incidents that happened in the theatre while I was on stage.
Well, people collapsed.
Yes. The first one was somebody on the top tier. Had collapsed, and so we were midway through a scene and someone just started screaming, you know, we need to get her out of here, somebody call an ambulance. So that was quite a lot, we just stopped, because obviously they needed to communicate, so I didn't want to be talking because I wanted to give them their space. But nobody came out and rescued us on stage, so with me and Matthew, who plays my brother, were just sitting there for like 2 or 3 minutes just staring out into the audience and also not looking at each other, because we were trying to kind of remain in character. So that was really intense. And then 4 days later, I was on stage and a woman in the front row started having an epileptic fit.
Oh my God.
It was unbelievably graphic. And
oh my God.
And because she was in the front row, the lights were kind of on her, so I could I could see everything. And I had to stop the show at that point. I was like, we need to get, as a medical emergency, can somebody come and help this lady in the front row that needs help? And the reason I bring this up is because I think up until those points, I'd been so good at keeping Lily and Couturian, which is the name of my character, completely separate. And actually the getting dressed up after the show had really helped with that, because, you know, there's just two very clear, very different identities. Mm. Because actually with Couturian, there is a lot of crossover, and it does have potential to be quite traumatizing for me if I kind of let her too far into my sort of psyche. But in these medical emergencies, completely out of my control, both of those people had to come together at the same time, especially after the epileptic fit. I just broke down. I just came off the side of stage and I just started crying. And I was crying for 20 minutes straight. And I hadn't, as it was happening, I was like, I haven't done this for months. I haven't cried for months. So I think that in answer to your question, I had been doing a really good job of not letting it affect me. And I was thinking, you know, people would come out for dinner and they'd be like, are you okay? You seem really distant. And I think that I had disassociated so much just to get through this show. And that actually in the last couple of weeks it started to come out, because it also hasn't really stopped. Like a tap has been opened.
Maybe that's quite good.
But I could just be walking along and someone would be like, how are you? And I'll be like, so it's got a little bit
so
like
the
that.
Cork's out the top of the bottle.
So now, I think that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, so now what? How do you feel like you want to proceed with the next few weeks of the show? And feeling like
just got to do it.
But like the tap's open, the tap's on.
I'm very grateful for my sobriety, because I think I would have been leaning on alcohol and whatever else to kind of numb it all. And that could definitely
become a problem. You said that when I came to see you, actually. When me and Alison came, you said, you know, what's hard at the end is like most people go out and get pissed or whatever, do whatever it is they do, and you can't do that. And actually that's a difficult moment.
Yes.
So let's talk about your sobriety. How long have you been sober now?
4 years.
And how has it changed your life?
I mean, in every single way. I mean, this is not exaggerating. I really don't know if I would be alive.
Right.
And that's not because of, I think that I used to drink or take drugs to a certain extent that I would have like overdosed or choked on my own vomit or something like that. But I just think that my mental health would have got so bad that I just don't know if I'd still be here. And I would, you know, certainly wouldn't be in my relationship with David. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have such a connected relationship with my children, who are incredibly self-aware now and are able to identify and talk about their emotions, which is, for me, my greatest achievement, because I
didn't feel like that.
Still find it quite hard to be, you know, completely vulnerable and honest and truthful about my feelings. And I don't really know how to identify them a lot of times. Certainly don't really know how to share them with other people. But my kids do. And I think it's such a valuable thing to be able to do. And they're 10 and 11 and they can do it. And
it's huge.
And so I feel like, yeah, fuck playing Glastonbury, like my kids can tell you how.
Yeah, but it's a massive thing. It's a massive thing as a parent to know that you, to feel like your children are emotionally healthy.
Yeah,
That's a massive, massive thing.
Yeah.
Were you worried about how it would be in your relationships that were, because our relationship was never based on that because we're friends from birth, your birth.
Yes.
But a lot of drinking and partying and all that stuff ran through our relationship for a long time. So I know that I was worried that it would be hard for us to be close, but I actually think we're closer.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years. Not closer, but like found something else.
Healthier.
Yeah, healthier.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I used to use drugs and alcohol as a way to switch everything off, you know, which means that you stop experiencing and having truthful and valuable relationships with people, and
you're,
it becomes
much more
about something else.
Level, right? Your energy, like being around you, it's like, I, you know, I don't feel worried about you all the time. I used to feel worried about you all the time. I used to feel worried about you all the time as well, Makita. I don't feel worried about either of you anymore.
Whoa.
No, I don't.
It took us 40 years to get it.
Well, well done, us. No, but you just feel like,
no, and
you,
I
feel
mean,
like
I think
steady as she
that's
goes.
What it does, you know, that's what it does, is it helps you to feel more level. You know, I don't feel like I'm living life to the extremes. There are no extreme highs, but there are also no extreme lows anymore. Yeah. And so sometimes I miss it. You know, I look at Glastonbury or like carnivals happening in a couple of weeks, and I think, God, it would be fun, you know, to go there and have fun like we used to. But I just know what it feels like 2 weeks later, and and fun, it's just different. Not worth it. It's not worth it. Yeah, for me.
But you are coming.
I am coming.
Are you going to carnival?
Yes, she is.
I'm going to go on the Sunday. Yeah. And the kids are going to come as well.
So yeah. You're going to take the girls to carnival.
We're going
to
do it a new way.
Yeah.
We just went, we've been filming,
I heard.
And we went to the old flat.
Oh my God, we went to
your
Paris
old
Terrace,
flat.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
we were filming on the stoop, and then this lady came out, and we were like, oh shit, that's the hallway. This is Paris Terrace that Mum and I, the home that we had, the beautiful housing trust flat in West London for 14 years, that Lily was very much a member of.
Do you remember there used to be a trolley in the house?
Oh my God, yeah, in the hallway.
A shopping trolley.
Yes. Shopping trolley.
There was, wasn't
I think
there?
You
what
nicked it from Tesco's.
Wasn't mine.
I think you got it from Tesco's, and then you were like, it's quite handy.
It's entirely possible. And because I used to have to carry a lot of chicken up Westbourne Park Road
all the time. Yeah, but Mum, they used to have those things so that you couldn't take the trolley out.
No, they came in later because people like me used to make shocking
They came in because of people like me stealing the trolleys.
But I remember being put in that trolley, and you and Phoebe putting pillows on top of
a duvet over your head.
Yeah. And being just trapped in the trolley.
I know, and I was trying to see how claustrophobic you really were.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's really sweet. What a nice story.
That's nice spin on it that she's put there.
No, it was completely evil. It was like, she was like, I'm claustrophobic. I was like, let's see how much it was fucked up.
Also the broom, that was our way of communicating with you. The
can
broom
we
on
not
the wall.
Can we not talk about that? I can't talk about that.
It's talking about me having sex.
We would be like,
my poor mum, 24 or something, just trying to have a life. Trying to have a life. And we're like, bang, you're like, shut up, guys. The poor guy
children.
Must have been like, I'm out of here.
It's like, don't worry, it's just the kids.
It's just...
Don't worry about that.
I'm sorry, Mommy.
So we got into the flat. Well, we didn't get into the flat. We got into the hallway the other day.
Just Makita's, the main hallway.
Makita got very... We both got very emotional.
I'm very good.
Makita started crying. Then half an hour later, we went and had something to eat, and I started throwing up.
No.
And I couldn't stop.
Couldn't
I had to come
stop vomiting.
Home. I lost the ability to talk. It was like all... Because when we lived at that flat, that's when my brother died. It's when my ex-boyfriend got stabbed. I opened the door and he fell through the door. And I realised that so much trauma happened in that flat. Even because in my head, I just think of all the nice things.
Yeah.
And all the...
But I think you don't, because that's why the disconnect, when I'm like, let's go back to West London and like reminiscing. You're like, no thanks. I think you know that there's some old other stuff there.
It was deep.
But I wondered, Lily... because that was a house that you were at a lot and that you grew up in a lot. How do you see the childhood that we had now in your late 30s? What do you think about it, especially now that you're a mum?
I feel very lucky because I think we had such a sort of smorgasbord of people, like people from all different class brackets, race brackets, what people were doing for their jobs. Like, it was just like we knew everyone, and I don't feel like there was ever any like we didn't really like prioritize certain people because they made more money or they were more famous. Everyone had their worth, and I think that is what I take from my childhood. Really, is that yes, we were at Groucho's, but we would also like be, doing really bad things on the 25th floor of some council estate with two roofboys.
Jesus Christ.
No, but I think, we were exposed to so much, to so many different things. And actually, it was valuable to even to have like a little look into some really privileged people's life, because you could see that those people weren't actually happy.
Yeah.
So we never really put that stuff up on a pedestal. And so I think what I came away from my childhood thinking was that it's the relationships that you build with people that are valuable, and those long-lasting relationships.
There were several times when you were not getting on with your mum or your dad or whatever, and you would just turn up at ours and sleep on, just move just into Makita's house. Yeah. Like, move into Makita's room.
Quite a few people would say that. Yeah, Lily lived with us.
I got to work one day when I was doing GLR and I was doing the afternoon show, and I walked in and this woman went, there's a girl here. She says she's Keith Allen's daughter. And I went, what, really? Where? She went, she's in the office.
See,
she
was like, really freaked out.
And I came in and you were like, hi. I said, no, she is fine.
Yeah.
She thought you were making it up. There? I don't know, you'd had an argument with Keith or something.
Yeah, I
called him and I was like, I've got her.
I was such a, like, weirdly independent and tenacious little thing.
You were,
I know, I used to, like, know the number of Groucho's off by heart. Yeah. And I'd, like, little snippets of information. My mum would, like, to say that she was going out for dinner somewhere, and I'd find, call 192, get the number, call up, and I'd be like, I need to speak to Alison. No, she was always being interrupted in dinners.
Weird.
With, like, me going, where are you? Lily. Well, yeah, just checking you were there. Like, it was like role reversal. Like,
you were a funny little thing.
But also, I just used to get on with it.
I remember Alison saying to me once, she said, oh, God, the weirdest thing happened with Lily last night. What was it? And you had been like, Mum, I need a hug. You were probably about three.
Mum, I need a hug.
Mum, I need a hug. Mum, I need a hug. No, no. And you went, and Alison said, so I was giving her a hug, and you went, okay, that's enough.
Alison was like, I wasn't really done. You were like, yeah, that's enough. That's enough. I feel better now, thank you.
Yeah,
you can go now.
Thing is, Lily's not that huggy, but when you are tactile.
I don't think people would necessarily say I'm a tactile person.
No, but when you are,
like, don't touch
you
me.
Really mean it.
So yes. Lily gives you a hug, it's because she really wants to give you a hug. Not because people hug each other.
So I think it means more.
I hate it. And I'm like an emotional, like, total teddy bear. I'm like, oh, God, I love you so much. She's like, okay. Get away.
You are very, like, strokey, huggy.
Yes, very.
Marnie, my youngest, is like that.
Is she?
Yeah, Ethel's like me. She's like...
Yeah, Ethel's totally like you. Like,
Ethel is very like you. I walked into something when it was your birthday down in Gloucestershire, and I walked into it and all the kids were there, and Ethel went, why do people keep interrupting me? And I thought, oh, my God, you're just like your mother. She was like, oh, for God's sake, can't you see I'm busy?
Is it intense having daughters? Does it make it easier to see all the stuff in you, in
I
them?
Just love having daughters so much. I mean, I really thought when I was younger that I was going to be, because a lot of my friends are male. I was always a boy girl. And so I always thought I'm going to have boys. And I just love my girls. They're just hilarious.
Yeah, they are so funny.
I have to let me just read you a quick story about text.
Are they getting American accents? No. I saw
a little bit.
No, Marnie a little bit.
Marnie wrote a letter to... She's in camp and she wrote a letter to Priscilla, our cat.
Oh.
She's low-key trying to make her jealous. Look, here she goes. Dear Priscilla.
Make the cat.
Yeah.
I'm at summer camp. I really wanted to bring you, but David didn't let me pack you. I think you would like it here. It's pretty fun. I held a rooster and named him Dragon. I'm also very good friends with a calf named Rookie. Even though he sometimes jumps on me. You would not like the waterfront, though. You would probably not even know it's water because it's so yellow. I like it. It's very fun. Miss you.
That feels like a book.
I should just let you know I am very good friends with
very good friends with a calf named Rookie.
Okay. Brilliant. I don't think it's going to get weird when I get back, but I thought I'd let you know.
I just have to tell you. I want you to get used to the idea because I'll probably be mentioning quite a lot by the time I get home.
Still, good writing though, right?
So I want to talk about this being a boy-girl thing. You're not like that, are you, Keats?
No, not like Lil.
So most of your mates, because I think of you with lots of dudes. Like yeah. I'm something of a boy girl.
Daddy
myself.
Issues.
Daddy issues.
Daddy issues.
And you know Lily's dad, don't you? Very
I
well.
I do know Lily's dad.
So
yes.
Why the hell would she have any daddy issues?
No, but there was a thing of like there was a group of boys. We won't name them, but that you know who you are. And they looked after Lil, and they were very much her protectors and her right. safety net. Did you feel like that? Did you feel that you needed them to kind of look after you at that time? Did it feel good to have those men in your life in that way?
No, I've just preferred boys. I mean, I think like just this podcast has shown you how much I like to talk about myself, and girls like to talk about themselves, so I don't really like girls.
Oh, got you.
Boys don't like to talk about themselves.
So they just listen.
That's so true. What they were was a captive audience for 5 years. Okay.
That's very Ta-da! Interesting. Also, I have found, because I've always had like groups of men that I've spent time with. Like, I don't really like hanging out with a whole bunch. I've got a lot of female friends.
Yes, that's the same as me.
But I don't like being out with like a bunch of women.
Yeah.
No.
I quite like going out with a bunch of dudes, and I've always had that.
Also, yeah. I think, you know, I did grow up with quite, the men in my life were quite misogynistic, I would say.
Quite sexist.
Quite sexist. What? And so I knew that I did not want to be viewed by men
in
the way that women had been presented to me by the men in my life.
Yeah.
And so my way of doing that was sort of co-opting them as friends. That's and I would be, it protected me from being objectified in that way. I think I was quite misogynistic, but I think it was because of the...
Being around that.
Being around that. And so it was, I viewed women in a negative way because that was what was presented to me. So it was like, I sort of made my mind up about what women were and what they were, how, where they sat in the world. And I made a decision. I don't want to be viewed like that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be objectified in that way. And so my way was like, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. So
get
I was
side. Like, oh my
yeah.
God.
But also, I mean, I'm not like that anymore, but I think that's what was going on. Another thing about me, just before we stop. No, I'm
yes.
talking.
So you're going to the theatre now.
I am. I'm going to go and I meant to have another meeting this afternoon, but I feel quite tired. So I'm going to just have a little nap.
Have a food yeah. nap. Yeah. I would imagine you need that. Yeah, you have a little food coma nap. You're not going to need to eat again, are you?
No.
That'd be nice.
Fuel for the play.
Yeah. Oh. I might take a little bit of this with you.
Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, that's fine. Because there's the other tray, isn't there?
Yeah, there's another tray.
I can see your eyes looking a bit like, is no one going to offer me a Tupperware?
Lily's like, are you trying to block my chicken?
I thought that's literally what you were about. You were like, hang on a minute. It's like, no.
No, because I was just double checking there's enough.
For who?
For what?
Garfield, Ebony T.
Garfield's already
Garfield's had
his
had a plate.
Plate. I'd like some more.
All right.
Okay, so there we go. Now we get Jump to the crux of the matter.
There's another tray of chicken.
It has been absolutely glorious having this lunch. I mean, it's everything that I'm not going to say like I'm bowled over by it because
it's what you
I
need.
Know what it is and that's why I asked for it. And I needed it, actually. And it has been... yeah, everything and more.
This isn't bowling over food. This is food that makes you supposed to warm up your heart.
Yes,
that's exactly. Like that's what
a little
it does.
Nap now. Yeah. That's what it does.
I mean, actually, I'd really like to sit in front of the sofa and watch the faculty.
Oh my God! Don't tease me.
That would be like the real old days, and then we can listen to the Santana album.
So you were listening to
a party.
Man, it's a hot man.
Yeah, that would have been.
Classic Saturday for us. Chicken, Burrows, Santana, yeah. And that, faculty.
You guys now have to have fun.
We really did.
Yeah. Cheers, darling.
Cheers.
This was a very
you
good
know,
drink.
I really... Oh, did you like this?
I did.
Delicious. It's your best drink. That was nice, wasn't it?
Oh, God, I don't know how long it's been since me, you and Lil just had, like, family lunch.
Yeah, it was really lovely.
How do you think she's doing right now?
I think she's doing great. I think she's the best she's ever been. When I was saying to her that she seems really level, it's like she really just has found...
peace.
It's just, I think, actually, learning to express... what, you know, she said she never had the words to express her emotions. She never had the word to really talk about how she feels. And because she's... got so much better at doing that, she just is released from a lot of that pent-up stuff that she always had. And I'm just happy for her because she just seems so happy, basically. Yeah. But clearly with Lily, like with all of us, and you're the same, it's like even if it scares you, she'll do it anyway. She said she was retching on the floor face down before 2:22, the curtains went up on the first time. And she still got up and went on the stage and killed it.
But you know what? I spoke to her that week and I was like, she was telling me how her nerves were affecting her, like physically. And I remember thinking, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah. This is going to be good.
Yeah. Retching on the floor, you say, with nerves. Ooh, some big dreams are about to be fulfilled. I was like, you should be retching.
Yeah.
This is a big old step.
Yeah. Sometimes things just scare you to the very core, and that's why, that's when you know,
I'm on the right path.
Deep breath, hunker down, get it done, did.
Yeah.
Here's cheers to that.
Thanks for thanks for raising us right.
So I would like to bring it to your attention that that concludes season one of Stirring It Up, the podcast.
Take a chow!
With Makita and Andy.
Yeah!
Oliver.
We did it. 8 episodes. We've interviewed 8 beautiful guests.
Are you liking it? I'm loving it.
Yeah, it feels like, especially doing someone like Lily, it was like a real statement of, oh, we really are doing what we've always done.
Yes.
Because
yes.
Lily saw it and went, can I come on? Because for her, what she was really saying is, can I come around and eat some food at your house? And like same as it ever was. So it kind of made me realise that whatever it is we thought we were going to do, we have kept it true to what we've always done.
Yes. Yes.
Come
around. People around. Bring a mate, enjoy yourself, kick back, chat, eat some food, and, you know, we'll do the rest. The plus ones have been excellent, and I'm so glad that we decided to make that part of the invitation, because I just think it for me, it's just meant meeting another excellent person every time. So I'm really looking forward to series two.
My idea, by the way, my idea. It's flown.
It was your idea. Okay.
Series two. We're going to have a little break and then we're going to be back for series two.
Well, we're going to be back for series two. Season two. Series two. Which
You like saying season.
I like saying
because
season.
Because it makes you think we're making Grey's Anatomy. And I like saying series because it makes me feel like we're making a great British drama.
Oh, you're such a lunatic. Season two, series two, whatever you want to call it, is just around the corner. We've got really great people lined up again. Me and Randell are like already putting our kitchen hats on, deciding what we're going to cook for everybody. And this was the drinks have been very excellent.
Thank
Congratulations.
You. Thank you.
Congratulations,
Thank
particularly
you.
On the steepers.
I know, this is my new thing. But then I think as we go into kind of the warmer months, I'll be making more different kinds of brews.
Oh my God, you know what we can have one day? Hot buttered rum.
Oh yeah, let's do that.
I mean, seriously.
See you episode one.
See you episode one, season two. Season two.
Season two.
Season two.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.